To be clear, you are saying this could be a coordinated release mirroring a respiratory spreading virus with a 90% mortality rate. A bioterrorism attack.
Yes, but it's not really all that well done, to be honest.
How so? Vic asked, leaning forward.
As I said, think of me as an infectious disease forensic investigator. I tried to find the index case in Angola. That's harder than one would think. All the bodies were incinerated to prevent the spread of the virus. However, in this country, we keep detailed medical records, and in the case of a new strain of airborne Ebola, some of the HIPAA restrictions are lifted by executive order. The CDC tracked down flight manifests from Angola and cross-referenced those with patients here in the United States. Up until this point, we've only looked at this through the public health lens because of the CDC's initial reporting from Angola. As far as I know, the CIA and the FBI have not convened a task force because, as of yet, no one has explored it from a national security angle. And based on what we have seen thus far, it seems cut and dried at face value. The virus index case is one of 457 people incinerated in Angola. But at least one carrier boards a plane and from Africa travels to the United States. What we've been concerned with up to now is tracking down and testing passengers for the disease to contain the spread, not scrutinizing their backgrounds, Katie said, thinking aloud. That's right, Haley confirmed.
I'll get detailed backgrounds on the passengers, Vic said.
From your connections at the State Department? Haley asked.
Yes, Vic confirmed.
Whoever did this made a mistake. I should have found a name on the manifests that matched a name in hospital records.
Unless the U.S. carrier is dead in their house and has not yet been identified, Reese observed.
True, but if you are a terrorist, you'd want us to tie a name on a flight to a name in a hospital and wrap it all up nicely to hand to the American public. Why wouldn't they do that? Katie asked.
OPSEC, Reese said.
Excuse me?
OPSEC. Operational Security. If we found them before they died, there is the possibility we could turn them and trace the attack back to its origin.
There is no getting around the fact that a carrier might be deceased in his or her bed and as of yet undiscovered, but it's also possible that person doesn't exist, that it was not brought in from Angola, Haley said.
There are still a lot of missing pieces here, Vic said.
Also true, but I found something else of interest, and it only came to me after Katie told me about what happened tonight and that her attackers were speaking Farsi. Which is? Katie asked. The first person admitted to Richardson Methodist Medical Center was Mahan Faramand. I did some digging. He's a second-generation Iranian-American. Interesting, Katie conceded. Is he still alive? No. Unfortunately, he was one of the first to succumb to the virus. Do you know what's even more interesting? The first group of patients in Aurora had two names that stood out. Izad Turan and Sebastian Phillips. Turan has been in the country for 25 years. Guess where he's from?
Iran, Vic stated.
What about Sebastian Phillips? Katie asked. He doesn't sound Iranian. His given name is Shahram Pahlavi. Where do you think his parents are from? Iran, Katie said, remembering the gunshots and the screaming in Farsi reverberating through the dark warehouse, now echoing through her mind.
Do we know if Izad Turan and Sebastian Phillips are still alive? Reese asked.
They are, Haley confirmed, at least as of 2 hours ago.
Did you check all the names from Richardson?
I did, of all patients thus far anyway.
And?
And there were three patients with Iranian surnames, Mahan Faramand, Reza Abed, and Hashem Shirazi.
Reese swallowed as the blood drained from his face. Reese, Vic said, are you okay? Reese stood and walked to the windows overlooking the Severn River. He felt the pull of the ocean. Take Katie and get out, get on that boat and sail away. To where? Anywhere but here.
Vic stood and moved next to Reese at the window.
Reese?
Vic, Reese said, the tone of his voice matching the darkness beyond the shutters.
The names.
What names?
Faramond, Turan, and Pahlavi. What about them?
Those are all last names on the 9/11 target list the president gave me.
Dear God.
Vic, get me a list of names from Angola. Highlight anyone with Iranian ties. Tell the president what's going on.
I'm going to wake up the director. We will brief the president at the PDB. I'll get a team of agency doctors on this immediately.
Vic, if Dr. Garrett is right and there is an Iranian connection to the hit tonight that is also linked to this outbreak or bio attack, they are not going to stop.
Can you get Katie somewhere safe?
Of course. What are you going to do?
I'm going to do what I do best. First, I need someone with an infectious disease background.
Reese turned back from the window.
Haley, are you up for a trip into the hot zone?
James,
Katie said, a tinge of nervousness in her voice.
Where are you going?
I want to talk to Izad Turan and Sebastian Phillips. And Vic?
Yes?
I'll need to borrow an agency jet.
Chapter 44. Denver, Colorado. The agency Gulfstream 550 landed at Denver International Airport and taxied to a private terminal set up by the Department of Justice after 9/11 to receive government aircraft and officials needing to avoid public air travel. The fleet of taxpayer-funded private aircraft had received scrutiny in recent years after the high-visibility firing of FBI Director James Comey, who was photographed boarding an FBI G550 in Los Angeles for a flight to D.C. As with most outrages, it was short-lived, as another hot topic distracted the media the following day. Reese and Haley were met by a young CIA analyst who was the agency liaison to the FBI Denver field office.
Mr. Donovan, Dr. Garrett, I'm Ken Daniel. I have your credentials and hazmat suits in the Suburban. The subjects have been moved from the hospital to two separate chem bioprotective shelters outside the main field hospital. As requested, they are under guard, though I have been told that was an unnecessary precaution.
Why is that? Reese asked.
They were some of the first patients, sir. They don't have much time left. They had already been triaged to the expectant area.
Reese nodded. Expectant meant there was no hope. Usually annotated with a black badge, those in the expectant category of military triage were given pain medications and left to die, while resources were allocated to those patients who had a chance.
Thanks, Ken. The guards are there to keep anyone from killing them before we can question them, Reese said.
Oh, I see.
Ken wiped sweat from a brow that carried a look of perpetual nervousness. He was young, thin, with a mop of blonde hair that Reese suspected drove the FBI agents in the field office nuts.
What do you do for the agency, Ken? Reese asked as they made their way to the black Suburban parked on the edge of the tarmac.
Analysts, sir. Collections.
Do you have time overseas?
Not yet, sir. I've been in Denver for the past year, mostly answering emails and trail running.
How far is the hospital?
About 10 minutes. Everything south of the 70 is shut down, from the Denver Zoo to Buckley Air Force Base. I'm sure you've seen the rioting. It's getting bad. I'm worried the military is going to kill more people just keeping containment than this virus would.
Reese and Haley shared a look.
That's why we're here, Ken,
Haley said.
Do the two people under guard have something to do with this?
We are going to find out.
Reese's phone buzzed.
Excuse me, he said, hitting accept. He put the phone to his ear and stepped away from his colleagues.
What do you have for me, Vic?
Confirmation that Sebastian Phillips is Shahram Pahlavi. His parents emigrated from Europe in the mid-90s, both doctors. Settled in California and then Arizona, where Shahram was born. Prior to medical school at University of Leuven, Belgium, they were citizens of Iran. I just put them under surveillance in Phoenix.
The father was on my list. Shahram would have been just a kid on 9/11. Anything else?
Shahram rents an apartment near the university, but he owns a home in Denver. Tax records do not indicate any rental income from either property. I'll text you the addresses. I'm working to get local LE and FBI on those locations, but they are overtaxed right now with containment, protests, and rioting.
Understood. How about Izzad Turan?
NSA went through his email and browsing history. It's clean. They went deep and found an old Hotmail account set up in 1999. It never sent an email. Its draft folder was accessed, but the contents deleted, and it hasn't been touched since 2001. It was so long ago that the NSA has not been able to recover or restore the deleted files.
Back when using the draft folder with two or more people, having the login information was the preferred method of communication for terrorists.
What about cell phone tracking data? Turan does not appear to own a cell phone. Not that we could find, anyway. Shahram's locational data was turned off for the most part, but as you know, we can still track. That data indicates a pattern of life that centers around his apartment and campus, with occasional trips to the Rocky Mountains.
What does that tell us?
The report indicates that on multiple occasions he left his phone at the apartment when we have him active on university computers.
So he's leaving his cell phone in his apartment?
Yes. It's possible he's just forgetful, Vic conceded.
It's also possible he doesn't want his phone carrier capturing locational data on the days he leaves it at home, Reese said, remembering the phone he left on his dresser in Coronado, California, as he started crossing names off his terminal list.
It's feasible.
Those are the days he's going to the house in Denver, Reese said.
I concur. That is a valid assumption.
What else do you have for us?
Reese, the hitters in Maryland, they all had Iranian ties.
Reese took a breath, calculating.
That fits. Is Katie locked down? She's not happy about it. Ox and the boys are standing watch.
Good.
How'd it go with the president? Reese asked, changing topics. I can't say much on this line other than there is staunch opposition to Haley's theory. People are scared, Reese. There are drastic measures on the table.
More drastic than isolating American cities and letting everyone inside die?
Reese, these phones are secure, but like every electronic device, only to a point. I am going to violate procedure and tell you something that could end my career, but you need to know.
I'm listening.
There is an option to eradicate a virus that threatens to destroy the country. It's been used before by the Soviets and then the Russians in Africa.
Reese remembered his dinner conversation with Katie in what seemed like another life. FAEs?
That's right, Reese.
On U.S. cities? Jesus!
Not to put any additional pressure on you, but the very real fate of the nation rests on what you find out from Shahram and Turan.
Reese looked back to Haley.
Reese, are you still there?
I'm here. Headed to the field hospital now.
Call me as soon as you have anything.
Roger. Reese terminated the call and walked back toward Haley and Ken, who stood waiting next to the Suburban.
What did he say?
Haley asked.
He said this is all up to us.
Chapter 45. On the drive to Buckley Air Force Base, Ken briefed Reese and Haley on the procedures for entering and exiting what was now referred to as a hot zone. Like Richardson, Aurora had become a prison, and it was increasingly evident to the residents that all those trapped within its borders would eventually die. Ken explained that the containment plan had called for a complete encirclement of a geographical area, with those on its borders moved 4 miles inward to create a no-man's-land buffer zone, a DMZ. Those without family and friends were put up in hotels in Denver and in tents on Buckley Air Force Base. The plan had not taken into account the power of American resolve and natural disdain for authority. The weapons that had at first been pointed in to keep those in the containment area from escaping were now augmented with additional forces holding back waves of protesters and family members from outside the isolation zones who wanted to know if their relatives were alive. Skirmishes had erupted between the military and citizens trying to break out of the hot zone and some trying to break into it. Americans had been shot and killed, and even the military had not emerged unscathed. Americans were dying on both sides of what some were starting to refer to as a civil war. Reese could only imagine the confusion of a young 18-year-old kid embalmed in a claustrophobic hazmat suit with a fogged-up gas mask, holding an iron-sided M16 or behind a 240 Golf on the back of a Humvee as his fellow citizens approached with guns, knives, baseball bats, skateboards, bricks, and Molotov cocktails. Ken explained that criminals had taken advantage of the chaos and were again rioting and looting shopping districts in Denver under the pretense of protesting government incursion a few miles east. Those with the means to do so had fled the state. A panic had gripped the nation. Cities across the country were descending into chaos, with rioters and looters protesting the actions in Richardson and Aurora. The virus, government response, and subsequent rioting had sent the economy into a tailspin. An enemy had breached the gates. Second and third order effects, Reese thought. As with Iraq and Afghanistan, plans that looked good on paper rarely, if ever, survived first contact with the enemy. The men and women in hazmat suits tasked with protecting the country by containing entire cities were feeling the results of those unintended consequences. They had turned their weapons against the very people whose taxes paid their salaries and provided the rifles and ammunition now being used against them.
Imagine what happens if they find out this is not a naturally occurring virus, Reese thought. They are going to demand someone pay. A population, a country, someone.
The Suburban pulled through three separate checkpoints as it made its way onto the Air Force base, finally passing through the 6th Avenue gate. Ken parked the SUV in the large parking lot just inside the perimeter where temporary tents had been set up. It reminded Reese of the early forward operating bases from the War on Terror. A four-vehicle convoy consisting of two Humvees and two Strikers awaited them. Reese couldn't help but notice the 30-millimeter cannons atop the Strikers and the 50s in the Humvee turrets. They were lined up, engines on, ready to roll. All personnel were suited up in tan CBRN military hazmat suits with full-face gas masks. Reese turned to Haley.
Are you sure you want to do this?
I'm a doctor, Reese. I study infectious diseases. This is my theory. I'm going with you.
Reese nodded.
Okay, but if anything happens, just stay behind me. Listen to what I say and do it.
Deal. Now let me show you how to put on your suit.
Chapter 46. Leaving Buckley and entering the hot zone was akin to departing Baghdad's green zone after the Al-Askari mosque bombing in 2006. It was game on. The convoy sped through the streets, abruptly switching lanes under overpasses in case they were targeted by Molotov cocktails or bricks from above. The drivers had clearly been downrange. A car defying the isolation orders was forced to the side by warning shots from the lead Humvee. Reese wondered how long those rounds would remain warnings before lighting up any person or vehicle outside their homes.
The military has occupied the United States of America.
They sped down State Highway 30 and turned into the Aurora Hills Golf Course, which had been commandeered by the military and transformed for hospital overflow. Passing through another three heavily armed checkpoints, they entered the grounds of what 2 weeks earlier had been a place to relax, tee off, and enjoy a day with friends. It was now a morgue. Two huge tents with accompanying diesel generators and air filtration systems dominated the course. Refrigerated semi-tractor trailers packed the parking area for the bodies. The vehicles came to a stop and were met by three soldiers in the same tan CBRN military hazmat suits worn by those in the convoy.
You ready?
Reese asked across the rear passenger seat of the Humvee. Their gas masks had been fitted with new removable filters. Reese had instinctually screwed his into the left side of the mask, which would let him bring a rifle to his right shoulder if need be.
Old habits.
The integrated speech diaphragms allowed them to speak to one another without shouting, a vast improvement from just a few years before.
CBRN stood for Chemical, Biological, Radiological, Nuclear. The suits and gas masks were designed to protect service members from toxic industrial chemicals and chemical warfare agents, to include radioactive dust, noxious gas, and vaporized pollutants. They were an unfortunate necessity of the modern battlefield. None of those wearing them today thought they would ever don them on U.S. soil, combating American citizens.
Let's do it. If I believed this was a respiratory spread virus, I wouldn't even let you come in with me without the required training. But this was spread in an aerosolized form like my example of the mall perfume samples.
How sure are you?
I'm willing to bet both our lives on it, but nothing is 100%, Rhys.
Terrific, Rhys said, exiting the vehicle to meet their escorts.
Mr. Donovan, Dr. Garrett, I'm Captain Grady, the soldier said through his gas mask.
Captain, Rhys acknowledged.
This was sent for you, he said to Rhys, handing over a